Hello, everyone. Welcome to our The Week That Was in Europe podcast. My name is Dirk Schumacher. I'm the head of European macro research at Natixis. And with me is Klaus Adam, professor of economics at the University of Mannheim.
Hello also from my side. So today we want to talk about the sharp decline in inflation that we have seen over the past 15 months. Euro area inflation peaked in October 2022 at 10.6%, and has since declined to 2.8% in January 2024. We thus witnessed a spectacular 8 percentage point decline in inflation over the course of just 15 months. In our podcast, we want to discuss the role the ECB played or didn't play in this strong decline in inflation that we saw. Broadly speaking, there exist two polar views on this matter, isn't it, Dirk?
Indeed. One view is that the euro area experienced temporary adverse supply shocks, which took a form of energy and supply chain problems. The supply shock, coupled with pent-up consumption demand following the pandemic, pushed inflation strongly up. But also, once the shock dissipated, caused a quick reversal in inflation rates. According to this view, monetary policy has little to do with the rise and the fall in inflation.
Right, and then there's something like an opposite view, namely that monetary policy is responsible both for the rise and the fall in inflation. According to this view, monetary policy was very accommodative for a long time prior to the pandemic. And once the pandemic hit, monetary policy was kept too accommodative for too long, adding fuel to the inflation fire. And then, as monetary policy started to tighten, inflation started to come down again. So both the rise and the fall of inflation would be due to monetary factors or monetary policy decisions. In this podcast, we will discuss the following, which of these two explanations, or whether a combination of the two, has most merit.
To understand the relative merits of these alternative viewpoints, we start by having a closer look at how inflation, including its various subcomponents, has evolved over time. All numbers that we refer to are year-over-year inflation rates, i.e., they compute inflation using the same month than in the year before. In January 2020, just prior to the COVID pandemic, headline inflation in the euro area stood at 1.4%. During the first year of the pandemic, inflation declined, reaching minus 0.3% in the period from September to December 2020. It then jumped up at the beginning of 2021 to plus 0.9 and then gained significant momentum during the course of 2021, ending the year at 5%. The increase continued in 2022, and in October 2022, headline inflation reached its peak at 10.6. Inflation then quickly reversed course, reaching 2.9 just 1 year later. The latest reading in January stands at 2.8.
Right. These movements were, of course, partly driven by energy prices. However, core inflation rates, which exclude these volatile energy prices, but also food prices, showed a very similar pattern of increase and retreat, although a less violent one. Core inflation reached its lowest reading of 0.7% in April 2021, when the COVID pandemic was just started in Europe, then peaked at 5.7% in March of 2023, so half a year later than headline inflation, and has since declined to 3.3%, which is the latest reading from January of 2024. The somewhat surprising feature of these inflation developments is that following the first COVID wave in 2020, inflation fell, with headline inflation becoming even negative. This is important because at the start of the pandemic, it was quite unclear how the pandemic would affect inflation.
Indeed. On the one hand, the pandemic led to a shutdown of many parts of the economy, thus operating similar to a negative supply shock, which usually pushes inflation up. On the other hand, the pandemic led to a demand contraction because consumers were not able or unwilling to spend. This usually pushes inflation down. With inflation going down during the initial phase of the pandemic, it became clear that the negative demand effect dominated at least initially.
Let's now look at some of the subcategories or the main subcategories of inflation to get a better idea of the underlying dynamics that were at play. The first important category is, of course, energy prices. In the 5 years prior to the pandemic, energy prices didn't contribute on average to inflation at all. Prices went up and down at times, but there was no time trend in energy prices. And in early 2020, when the COVID pandemic hit the world economy, what did we see? Well, energy prices collapsing. Things, however, turned around quickly in 2021, with energy prices starting to rise sharply. Initially, this looked just like a correction of the previous decline, but the increase in energy prices lasted much longer and was eventually turbocharged by Russia's invasion in Ukraine. At its peak, the energy component contributed directly around 4 percentage points to headline inflation, and that is true during most of 2022. But by the end of 2022, energy prices started to normalize and the energy components started to contribute negatively to headline inflation. And this negative contribution to inflation peaked in October, November 2023, last year, at 1.2 percentage points. In sum, the direct contribution of the energy component was immense, with swings adding up to 5 percentage points if we add the upward and the downward contributions from the middle of 2022 until now. So that's a huge component.
Indeed. Food prices were yet another significant driver of inflation, with a peak contribution to inflation in early 2023 of more than 3 percentage points. And finally, goods price inflation also contributed at its peak in early 2023 almost 3 percentage points to inflation, while the contribution from services peaked only in the middle of 2023 at around 2.3 percentage points. In sum, the energy and food components contributed around 60% to inflation from the beginning of 2021 until the end of 2023, with goods and services inflation accounting for the remaining 40%.
So, with this in mind, let's now talk about how monetary policy controls inflation. So, the main instrument through which a central bank controls inflation is the policy interest rate. This rate affects the funding conditions for the private sector, and an increase in this short-term policy rate, for instance, is usually passed on along to longer maturities in the bond market and to bank lending rates, thus causing a range of interest rates that are relevant for the private sector to go up. If interest rates on corporate loans, mortgages, or unsecured consumer lending go up, then this usually has a drag on investment spending and consumption spending. Thus, an important way the ECB can affect inflation is by slowing private demand. Incidentally, the supply side of the economy is usually considered to be unaffected by ECB's policy. So the ECB has to take as given, at least to a first approximation, the supply side of the economy, that is the amount of goods and services that the economy is able to produce.
And besides this demand channel, there's another channel through which monetary policy can influence inflation, and that is via the inflation expectations of households and corporates, i.e. the inflation expectation channel. Today's decision on prices are partly influenced by the expectations of how inflation will develop. Expectations of high inflation tomorrow can lead already today to higher prices and thus higher inflation. Put differently, there's also a self-fulfilling element in the inflation process. By anchoring private sector inflation expectations at the desired level, i.e. the target rate of the central bank, the central bank can contribute to controlling inflation. We'll now look at both of these channels, the demand channel and the expectations channel.
Yes, and to do so, let's briefly recapitulate what the ECB actually did in terms of actions, and how these actions are lined up with inflation dynamics. And thereafter, we discuss whether these actions actually causally contributed to these inflation dynamics. So the ECB started hiking its policy rates in July 2022. At this point, inflation was already running at around 9%. and was close to its peak, which would be reached just 3 months later in October at the inflation rate of 10.6%. Overall, the ECB then raised its deposit rate, which is the main policy instrument at this point, by 4.5 percentage points until October 2023. That is within the course of 15 months. This was a record speed of increase. And by the time it stopped raising interest rates, inflation had already come down to a level below 3%. So on a superficial level, these ECB rate hikes were quickly followed by a very substantial decline in inflation. But does that mean that the ECB rate hikes actually caused those declines in inflation? Or was that just a temporal coincidence?
So one important necessary condition for ECB rate hikes being causal for the inflation decline is that the rate hikes get actually quickly passed on by banks and financial markets to borrowers. And this was indeed the case. The so-called composite cost of borrowing, that's a measure that the ECB calculates and that aggregates bank lending rates across the maturity spectrum, increased from 1.9% in August 2022 to about 5% by the end of 2023. The transmission of policy rates into interest rates that are relevant for the private sector thus took place in a very swift manner.
Okay, so that's good news for the ECB with this settled. The next important question is, how much did these interest rate increases that the private sector faced as a result of ECB policy choices slow demand and then in turn inflation? This is of course a tricky question, but let's have a look at what the ECB itself has to say about this topic. In a recent speech, ECB board member Phil Lane provided an overview of the effect of ECB's policy tightening using a range of different models. Summarizing this research, Mr. Lane said, and I know, quote, conditional on a 1 percentage point change in the interest rate, on average, inflation declines by around 0.3 percentage points. And that is true after around four quarters. Translating this into cumulative effects, Mr. Lane then concluded, and I quote again, inflation is estimated to be around 1.2 percentage points lower in 2023 and 1.8 percentage points lower in 2024 as a result of the tightening, end of quote.
So we are citing these results, not we would take them at face value, but rather to give a broad sense on how important monetary policy tightening might have been for the observed decline in inflation, at least if you look at a wide range in models. And the answer here seems to be perhaps not so much. Let's now take a closer look at how different price categories evolved and see whether we can identify a negative impact on inflation from the monetary policy tightening. We think of this as a kind of plausibility check for the numbers just mentioned by the ECB itself.
Let's start again with energy prices. Energy prices are determined on a global level, and stronger or weaker demand in the euro area has only a relatively small influence on them. The large reduction in energy prices is thus likely not due to ECB policy. And next, let's look at food prices. Food price inflation was also to a large extent due to the increase in unprocessed food prices, which in turn was triggered by an explosion in fertilizer prices, also due to higher energy prices. So again, the rise and fall of food prices was likely unrelated to ECB policy. And we already mentioned that food prices and energy prices make up 60% of the increase and decline in the headline inflation rate. So from this follows that the big part of the observed inflation dynamics, all that was related to energy and food, was completely outside, or to a large extent outside, the ECB's control. So the most important inflation components on which the ECB policy could have left a mark are goods price inflation and service price inflation. We'll now have a look at these, starting with goods prices.
Yeah, looking at a trajectory of goods prices over the past 3 years, there are two factors that need to be kept in mind. First, there were important supply-side problems with good production. And second, there was pent-up demand for goods due to forced savings in services during a pandemic. As is well known, global supply chains came under immense stress during the pandemic, not least owing to China's zero COVID policy. This led to a sharp increase in delivery times and a similar sharp increase in prices for intermediate inputs. There's a strong correlation between those two. And as supply chains normalized, we saw a similar sharp decline in the price of intermediate inputs. Price changes for cars are a case in point here. The car sector was facing severe shortages of crucial intermediate inputs, such as semiconductors, that was well publicized at the time. And the price patterns are closely related to the shortages. Inflation for new vehicles was fluctuating in the 10 years before the pandemic between 0 and 2%, meaning a new car usually tended to cost 2% more, or actually nothing more, when you bought it in the 10 years before the pandemic. And vehicle inflation then shot up to 9% by the end of 2023 and is now back to 3.2%, December 2023 being here the latest data point.
So clearly, these supply shortages and their easing are also something on which the ECB has little to no impact. And demand for goods could have also played an important role in the observed price dynamics. Consumption plunged during the early part of the pandemic as movement was limited, shops were closed, and people forced to save. But as shops reopened and things gradually normalized, people started to spend again. The important point is that they spent disproportionately on goods, much less so on services, as many services, in particular restaurants, travel, and so on, were still subject to COVID restrictions.
So this combination of supply-side shortages and strong demand was something like a perfect storm, pushing goods prices inflation strongly up. But as demand for goods normalized and supply shortages faded, prices also came down again. So it is somewhat difficult to see how monetary policy could have had a significant impact on the observed decline of goods prices that was resulting from the easing of supply side shortages mostly. While it's true that credit to households has slowed significantly from the middle of 2022 onwards, and perhaps partly due to ECB policy, almost all of the decline can be accounted for by the decline in mortgage lending. We'll come back to this effect at a later stage of this podcast.
So again, when it comes to goods price inflation dynamics, it's not clear how much of a mark ECB policy could have possibly left on these dynamics. So we have largely ruled out food prices, energy prices, and goods price dynamics as being strongly affected by ECB policy. Let's now look at service price inflation. For this, we tried decomposing observed price movements into movements triggered by supply factors and movements triggered by demand factors. But owing to better data availability, we are able to do this in a more systematic way. We offer a decomposition, and the idea behind this decomposition is to look at changes in prices and real turnover for a given service at the same time. If we can observe that prices and real turnover increase at the same time, we would conclude that this is likely due to a rise in demand as being the underlying driver of these dynamics. Otherwise, as prices decrease and turnover decreases, it's been a supply factor. As prices increase and turnover decreases, it's been a supply factor. The idea here is that in any given period, only one of these shocks operates, either a supply or demand shock. And the underlying model is explained in more detail in a recent San Francisco Fed working paper titled Decomposing Supply and Demand-Driven Inflation that we reference in the box to this podcast.
So applying this approach to service prices in the euro area shows that most of the increase in service price inflation can be actually attributed to negative supply factors, meaning that prices have increased without turnover rising as well, at least on average over the service sector. While we would not take these results at face value, we're not 100% sure whether price and turnover data fully match, and of course they have to match in order to for that model to make sense. The often reported shortages of workers in the service sector could be an explanation for this. The publication of turnover data is quite delayed in the euro area, and we don't have yet data for Q4 last year. Thus, we cannot say whether the decline in services prices that started in Q3 2023 has been mostly due to demand weakness and thus possibly a result of ECB policy. In any case, services prices have only moderately declined so far, from 5.6% in July 2023 to 4% in January 2024. Even if all this decline were to be caused by demand weakness generated by monetary policy, i.e. the ECB, the overall contribution to the observed decline in headline inflation is still relatively small. In fact, if service inflation would have remained unchanged since July 2023, headline inflation would have been only 0.7% higher than it currently is, suggesting that this is perhaps an upper bound on the possible contribution of ECB policy to headline inflation.
And this is, of course, only about half to one third of the numbers mentioned in Phil Lane's ECB speech, but it's, of course, also only a back of the envelope calculation. We now want to come to the sector that appeared to be most strongly affected by ECB policy choices, and this is the real estate sector. There has been a sharp contraction in construction activity since the start of 2022. Investment in dwellings has declined by around 5 percentage points over the last 2 years. It is likely that higher interest rates are one of the important drivers for this development. However, it is not clear to what extent this has contributed to lower inflation. At least rental inflation has accelerated to 2.7% year over year, up from 1.8% in the middle of 2022, which may partly reflect more limited supply.
The transmission from a less dynamic real estate sector to lower inflation may, though, run through various channels. So lower investment spending in the real estate sector leads to overall lower economic growth in other sectors that provide inputs into the real estate sector. It also leads to labor market weakness that eventually moderates wage growth. But as we just discussed, there is little evidence for broader demand weakness leading to disinflation. It seems that weakness in real estate is not, at least yet, leading to more broad-based weakness. Again, it's hard to point fingers to a significant disinflation impact coming from monetary policy here.
So this leaves us with one last remaining channel through which monetary policy could have contributed to keeping inflation in check, and that is via keeping the inflation expectations of households and firms broadly stable. The ECB's consumer expectations survey shows that three-year inflation expectations, after rising during 2022, are broadly back to their 2021 level following the interest rate increases by the ECB. To be sure, it is almost impossible to quantify how important this effect is for inflation dynamics and how much the observed decline in inflation expectation is due to higher policy rates. Nevertheless, monetary theory at least suggests that by firmly anchoring inflation expectations, a central bank can contribute substantially to reducing the volatility of inflation in response to economic shocks, of which there was certainly no shortage in the recent past. And it is also likely that a continuous upward trend in inflation expectations would have become a genuine problem at some point. So, by raising interest rates, the ECB may have very well prevented this from happening, and this could have been the most important channel through which ECB policy contributed to stabilizing inflation.
So to sum up what we just discussed, it seems that monetary policy has not really played the main role here in bringing inflation down, at the same time also not necessarily was responsible for the huge surge in inflation. It's exogenous factors, mostly outside of the control of the ECB, that have driven the inflation dynamics over the last 2 years. But as Klaus just said, it's not a reason for the ECB to stand still, not least because the inflation expectation channels probably is an important one in without policy rate hikes, even though they might have had little direct impact. It could have easily been the case that those expectations would have drifted upwards. So it was necessary for the ECB to do had to do what it did. Though again, the direct dynamics probably reflect other factors outside of the control of the ECB. Well, that's all for this week, and talk to you the next week.